This episode originally ran in 2016. At the end of the show, we'll give you an update on the story.
On a hot day in the summer of 2012, Derek Walters drives to the Rio Casino in Las Vegas.
He's going there to play in the most famous poker tournament in the world, the World Series of Poker main event.
What do you wear to these tournaments?
Personally, I just try to wear, like, comfortable clothes. Yeah.
Like a tracksuit?
No, not a tracksuit. I try to, like, look presentable. Just, like, jeans, T-shirt, hoodie.
Sunglasses or no sunglasses?
I don't wear sunglasses. It would just be weird to me wearing them inside.
Because, in fact, it is weird to wear sunglasses inside.
We're back in Las Vegas for the 43rd edition of poker's most prestigious tournament.
Derek, like everyone at the tournament, has to pay $10,000 to play. If he wins, first prize is $8.5 million.
Derek is a professional poker player, and he figures he's got an edge.
There's always going to be some pros at your table, and there's going to be some recreational players, usually kind of like split half and half.
When you say recreational players, is that just a nice way of saying bad players?
Yes, that's the that's the PC way, one of the PC ways of saying that.
Derek is going to pick off these recreational players one by one and make a killing.
That is the plan anyway, but that is not how things go down.
On the very first day of the tournament, Derek goes all in and he loses. He's out.
It's a pretty bad feeling. You lose the last of your chips, you push them over to the other player and just kind of collect your things and just like do the walk of shame out of the poker room to your car. The hallways are so quiet just because like everyone's at their seats playing.
The $10,000 Derek used to buy into the World Series of Poker, that is gone. And Derek is completely out of the tournament.
Except he isn't. In fact, the 2012 main event is going to be the biggest payday of Derek Walters' life. Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Keith Romer.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Today on the show, the secret world of big money poker tournaments.
What you see on TV, that is just the surface of things.
There is a game behind the game.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from WeWork. Vicky Fulop is the co-founder of textile company and WeWork member Brooklinen. She chose to move her business into a WeWork office in part because of WeWork's flexible spaces.
We hope that we can keep growing, and we know that WeWork has really great solutions as companies become mid-size and large, and that they would be able to guide us to the best solution.
To learn more about how WeWork supports its members' growth through flexible workspace offerings, visit we.co/spacematters.
Stasha Shepherd thought she knew her dad. But then one day, a stranger called their home.
The phone is in my ear, and he's saying, "Your father's a crook. Did you know that?"
The story of a fallen hero and the mysterious obsession that drove him for decades, this week on Hidden Brain.
Stacey?
Yes?
I want you to get ready for some sweet ESPN poker tape.
All right, bring it on.
Before 6,598 players compete for poker's most important title, the tournament rooms are empty. No players, no dealers, no stories. The only thing that fills the room is hope.
That is how you report on an empty room.
Outside that empty room, though, there are some pretty great stories happening.
One of those stories is about that player Derek you heard at the beginning. He's renting this house about 5 miles south of the Las Vegas Strip with some of his poker buddies. It's a nice house. There's a pool table upstairs, swimming pool in the back.
The youngest guy in their group is just 21. He's a skinny guy with longish hair that he wears kind of swept across his forehead. His name is Jake Balsiger. He told us he didn't actually get his own room in this house.
No, I was sleeping on the couch. It was a huge couch, though. It was pretty nice, actually.
In terms of this group of guys that you're staying with, were you kind of the low man on the totem pole?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Unquestionably.
Jake cannot afford to buy into this big poker tournament. It costs $10,000, and he's in college. But he's friends with a bunch of the guys, so he comes down for a visit. He figures he'll go home once the tournament starts.
I had no intention of playing it. You know, it was a lot of money, and I didn't feel comfortable risking that or anything, you know. And my friend Max was having his birthday party that day, and I had actually literally packed up everything I brought to Vegas into my car and I was going to leave. And then they were like, you know, just hang out, you know, at the party for, you know, a couple hours. Like, you know, you can drive home like any time of the day. It's fine. Just hang out for a little bit.
The party goes on for a while. People are drinking. And Derek and the other guys are like, Jake, you got to do this. You just turned 21. You can actually legally play in the tournament. It's the World Series, the main event.
I don't know, just because they were, you know, drunk and in a good mood or whatnot. But they're like, oh, you know, man, you got to play the main. Just stay for the main. We'll buy a piece.
The guys say, look, we will pay for it. We will pay the $10,000 so you can play.
Who are these friends?
I don't know. I don't have friends like that.
Actually, they're not just giving him the money. His roommates are offering to stake him. That is the term. And what it means is that they're going to be investing in Jake. If someone chips in 10% of the buy-in, that guy will get 10% of whatever Jake, the kid sleeping on the couch, wins.
Did he pass a hat and people just be like, I'll put in $1,500? Like, how did that actually work?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much so. So I don't know who first said it, but one of them was like, yeah, you know, I'll take like 10%. And somebody else was like, yeah, I'll take 10. Somebody else was like, yeah, I'll take, you know, 10 or 15. And then it just got up to a number where if I lost it, I lost it. It's not too huge of a risk.
So if Jake wins, he would get to keep some of the money, but most of it would go to his roommates, like Derek.
Derek puts in $1,500, and now he basically owns shares in Jake, like Jake is a stock or something.
And Jake is not his only investment. Derek actually has to make a spreadsheet to keep track of all the players he's investing money in.
Let's see. A lot of these are screen names. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so Acid Knight, 5%. Chip Chucker, 5%. Zach Vac, 5%. Jumanji Board, 5%. Kavino, 5%. Skills Dick Kills, 5%. K-Swell, 5%. 9mil, 5%. John K, 5%. Manchild, 5%. Jake, 15%. I think that's it.
Some of these guys Derek is friends with, but some, he says, he wouldn't recognize even if he ran into them at the tournament. They're just poker players that he finds online.
So you just sent $500 to a dude named Chip Chucker that you've never seen in your life?
Yeah, probably like half of the deals I do, like I never meet the person. Yeah.
So this is part of the game behind the game. Poker tournaments are really expensive. And so a lot of the players you see on TV, they're not playing with their own money.
Even really good players, most of the time they enter a tournament, they're going to lose. And even if they do win, only a few people are going to win the really big prizes. Poker tournaments are sort of a recipe for burning through a lot of money.
Being a professional poker player is like having a job where you get paid once every 10 years. And when you do get paid, it's a lot of money. It's 10 years worth of money, but there are a lot of lean times before that.
That's why poker players like Derek spread their risk around a little. Instead of just making one giant bet on themselves, they make all these other little bets too. Of course, buying shares in other players can get expensive, so there's another thing poker players do. They trade shares of themselves with other players.
Before the tournament begins, Derek does this too. It's a simple system. He finds a guy he wants to trade with, and they make a deal.
I'll give him 5% of whatever I win, and he'll give me 5% of whatever he wins.
For this tournament, Derek made 5 swaps.
I swapped with my friends Chardin, Max, Jake, Ajay, and Misha. They were all 5%.
These are all handshake deals, by the way. No contracts.
Normally, you'll plan it like a day in advance. You'll just like message your friends and like make sure you guys are on the same page with the swaps. But sometimes you'll just see like a friend you haven't seen in a while in the hallway, and you'll be like, oh yeah, hey, let's swap a little bit.
You'll just send a text message and say, hey, if you win $8 million, I'll get 5% of it, right? You're cool with that? I'm cool with that? Like, that's it?
Yep, that's it.
Derek says you only really want to swap percentages with someone who's as good as you are.
Has someone ever asked you to swap and you're like, no, I'm sorry. I think you're not so good.
One move is like someone asks you to swap. You don't really want to. You're like, yeah, I'll like swap 1% with you. There's a lot of ways you could deal with the situation. Like, you can just say, oh, sorry, I'm swapped out. I've already swapped with so many people, you know, and it's not a big deal.
Derek is not the only one doing all this swapping and buying and selling, by the way. He estimates that something like half of the players in this tournament have sold a percentage of themselves.
And even more than that are swapping pieces of themselves.
I would say basically every professional is swapping.
And this can lead to some awkward situations.
Like, what if Derek and Chip Chucker end up sitting next to each other? Why would Derek try to knock Chip Chucker out? That hurts him. That's his investment. Does it ever happen that you end up at the same table with somebody you've swapped shares with or you own shares of?
Yeah, that happens all the time. And yeah, as long as you have like a small percentage of them, it's not really a big deal.
But I mean, so like in the business world or in the professional world or in the world, we would call this a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is definitely a conflict of interest, and you don't want to cheat the other players, basically.
I asked a lot of poker players about this, and they basically all said, yeah, this could be a problem, but at this point, the shares players have in each other, they tend to be pretty small, and there's just not a way to help out the other guy without hurting your own chances. Either they get my chips or I get my chips. You can't have it both ways.
This is a tournament for everyone, and everyone is here. Pros, amateurs, dreamers.
This is the scene when the tournament starts. There are three giant rooms in the Rio Casino, poker tables as far as you can see. There are 6,000 people playing in this tournament. You can hear the sound of the chips in the room.
Derek, as we mentioned, got knocked out of the tournament on his first date, but because of the game behind the game, he is not out. Between all of those swaps and shares, he's got a piece of 15 players who are still in the tournament. It is like this little army of Derek's out there, all trying to win him money.
All right, so a 13.5 million chip pot. They see the tray of spades on the river.
The tournament keeps going. Day one, day two, day three. Derek's army of players gets knocked out one after the other. By the middle of day four, Derek's only got four players left.
Then Chip Chucker goes down, then Manchild.
141 pros and amateurs continue on day five.
Then K-Swell gets knocked out.
Derek has only got one chance left in this tournament. One player he is now pinning all of his hopes on. Jake.
Jake, the 21-year-old kid sleeping on the couch, the one whose friends chipped in so he could play the tournament.
Day one went decent. Day two went pretty well. And then from day three and on, I was just, like, running very, very good.
Over the course of that week, did the guys from the house start treating you any differently?
Yeah, they let me move into the master bedroom from the couch.
Oh!
that was pretty cool. You know, definitely moved up in the world.
The guys who paid for Jake to play, they decide they need to take better care of their investment. So he gets the master bedroom and whatever else he wants. Derek says if Jake wanted something to drink at the poker table, he liked fancy juices, one of the guys would bring it to him.
I know definitely one of his requests at the time was naked juice. We did a lot of that.
What kind? Like the green kind?
One of the fruit kinds, yeah, I'm not sure.
And Jake just keeps winning and hanging around.
Right, now back to Balsiger. Running deep in this 21-year-old's first ever main event. He makes it 2 million straight.
And hanging around.
All right, action on Jake Balsiger, the 21-year-old, coming off his junior year at Arizona State with a raise to $500,000 with ace.
And hanging around.
And when those 6,598 players finally get winnowed down to 9 players to the final table of the tournament, you know who still wasn't knocked out?
Balsiger gets new life!
Getting to be one of the 9 players at the final table is a big deal. Poker players try their whole lives to get there, and Jake makes it the first year he's even legally allowed inside the casino.
I mean, it's just the literal best feeling there is, you know, like during that entire time, you know, you're just on like complete cloud 9.
The final table is played in this theater with 1,000 or 2,000 seats. Jake is wearing the same blue plaid shirt he wore for every day of the tournament.
It's a really cool environment. It's very high energy. You know, people are, like, cheering. People are just getting very, like, drunk during it. You know, it's kind of just like a crazy sports game almost.
Wow! Gutsy, gutsy call.
At that table, Jake looks really, really young, like they let this skinny teenager in off the street or something. Behind him, his whole crew is wearing the same blue plaid shirts that Jake is wearing.
Derek is there, of course, right in the front row on the rail.
When you're on the rail and you have a piece of someone, it's like you, personally, I get a lot more nervous than when I'm playing. I'm just like sitting there and I have no control.
So it's like you're gambling.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, when your guy, like, gets all in and you're just, like, watching on the sidelines, it's really intense.
The clock about to strike midnight on Jake Balsiger's fairy tale.
All right, now the turn card is a 10!
That cheering, you can probably hear Derek in there.
After hours and hours of play, the 9 players get whittled down to 4.
And Jake, skinny little Jake, is still there holding his own.
Jake gets all in against another player, Russell Thomas.
Ace king for Balsiger, ace nine off for Thomas, and this could be the end of our evening.
Jake wins the hand and takes Russell out of the tournament.
And it is a seven of hearts, and that won't do it for Russell Thomas. Knocked out of the main event by Jake Balsiger, who gets a lot stronger.
In the end, that's as far as our player Jake and our investor Derek get.
Many, many, many hours later, Jake gets knocked out himself. He takes third. But you know what you get with third place? A lot of money.
John Balsiger out in third place, winning almost $4 million.
What they are not telling you on TV is that Jake is not taking home $4 million. He's taking home a little under $700,000. The rest of it is going to his buddies who invested in him.
After the tournament ends, Jake wires his friends their share. For Derek, Jake writes a personal check for $600,000 on a Hello Kitty check.
Yeah, I had a Hello Kitty checkbook, which I loved. I thought it was funny.
With his share of the money, Jake goes big.
The only two, like, possessions I remember buying were a bed frame from IKEA because I'd been sleeping just, like, on the mattress on the floor. And then I bought a hammock on Amazon for, like, I want to say $120.
Derek, our investor who watched the whole tournament from the sidelines, he took home almost as much as Jake, $600,000.
Derek took that money and reinvested it.
Derek still plays tournaments, but more and more, this is what he's doing, buying up shares in other players.
Are you a better investor or a better poker player?
I'm definitely a better investor, I think. There's a lot of really good poker players, but there's not that many people who do as much investing as me.
Derek knows a lot about poker. He knows the math. He knows that if you need an ace or a 10 to come on the last card, you've got a 17.4% chance. Knowing the odds is his job. And for him, the odds are best when he is betting on other people instead of playing himself. That was our story in 2016. An update after the break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the new Capital One Saver Card. Now when you go out, you cash in. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases. What's in your wallet?
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on the next How I Built This, how two women with no background in fitness set up some stationary bikes, dimmed the lights, boosted the music, and created a cult following and a multi-million dollar business called SoulCycle. You can find How I Built This wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's Keith here in 2019. It's now been 6.5 years since Jake won all that money at the World Series of Poker. And it turned out it was not beginner's luck. Jake has gone on to become a professional poker player. He does not need his friends to buy him into tournaments anymore. Now he is one of the pros that folks like Derek are super eager to swap with. And Derek? Still investing. So I called him up on Skype to find out what's changed.
Hey, Keith. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing, man? Derek reports he is still making good money as a poker investor, but now that he's got more money to invest, he's started running into a problem.
Last year, it was to the point where I couldn't put in as much as I even wanted to. I could see a player who's really great in an amazing tournament, but he only has like 20% available for sale.
Derek is learning poker investing is hard to scale up.
Optimal strategy for me would to be like, okay, I want to put $5,000 into that. Which that's something that you could do with like stocks or real estate, maybe.
But not poker. Don't feel too bad for Derek, though. He's still a poker player and a really good one. Last February, he made the final table of this big tournament in Los Angeles.
It was $1 million up top and ended up getting third place in the end for about $430,000.
His buddy Jake decided not to play that tournament. So the 5% swap they normally would have done didn't happen.
That seems like that was a mistake on his part.
It's very unlucky for Jake.
I did offer to help Derek with his investing problem. After all, I've been having all of this success at the lowest possible limits in Atlantic City.
I have been crushing the 1-2 game at the Borgata. Is this the year that you're going to stake me for the main event?
Okay, the 1-2. I've never been to Borgata, so that could be outside of my scope. But that's a great start, though.
I feel like all you've done is update your way of refusing people who you shouldn't stake. That's outside my scope. That's nice.
Like any good investor, Derek still knows a bad deal when he sees one. So instead of finding worse and worse poker players to invest in with all his extra money, he's diversifying. He's shifting some of his focus to startups. Special thanks today to Jesse Sylvia, Sean Deeb, Carol Klein, Mike McDonald, Ryan LaPlante, and Jen Newell.
We always love to hear what you think of the show. Email us, planetmoney@npr.org, or find us on Facebook.
We are also at Planet Money on Twitter and Instagram. And if you are jonesing for another podcast about poker, may I suggest ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast. For the show's fourth season, I reported an entire episode about Chris Moneymaker and the 2003 World Series of Poker.
I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith.
And I'm Keith Romer. Thanks for listening.